Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com. And today, the Sierra Club, along with a number of other organizations, have come together to provide free tree seedlings for people who want to pick them up at two locations between 10 and 3 today. And that's at Seneca Park, right near the zoo entrance. Also, Genesee Valley Park, near the swimming pool, which is off Elmwood. And these are self-serve stations. They did have an interesting note from the Sierra Club just a couple days ago that because the nursery where these are grown has not had a frost yet, there were some tree seedlings that they could not dig. And so some of the ones that they're planning to have may not be available. The note says there may be some silver maples substituted, some red oak trees perhaps. I also saw another note that said maybe redbud trees. So they're all native trees that are being offered, and they are free. This is part of an effort to plant a trillion trees. I don't know, they might... Call actually seeing a number of, well, they have their goal is to plant 1,000 trees, and they wanted to do this in Genesee Valley Park, but the pandemic forced them to change their plans, and so they are going to plant some in Genesee Valley Park probably next Saturday, a week from now. And if you're interested in participating, check their website, sierraclub.org, and look for the Rochester New York chapter. But today from 10 to 3 at both those locations, Seneca Park. And by the way, you should take a hike in Seneca Park while you're there. It's beautiful. It's just beyond the zoo entrance off of St. Paul Boulevard. And I was there last weekend hiking through, and it's a beautiful view of the river. A few years ago when I was there, I saw a bald eagle across the river in one of the trees. So if you haven't been up there, maybe this is an excuse to go to Seneca Park today. It's the tree giveaway is today only. And then again, the other location is Genesee Valley Park near the swimming pool. And that's off Elmwood Avenue. And you should drive through the Genesee Valley Park as well and make sure to cross in the park. You can cross over not only the canal, but also 390. And get to the Polo Grounds and maybe drive around and sort of explore that area if you haven't been over there, because that has, I think, some of the most beautiful fall trees anywhere around. And some of the Tupelo leaves are starting to come down, so you want to get there, in the next couple of days to see some of the best fall color. So again, the organizations that are sponsoring this, members of the Rochester Regional Group of the Sierra Club, and they are still taking donations if you'd like to help pay for these tree seedlings. Rochester People's Climate Coalition, the City of Rochester Department of Forestry, and Dr. Jenny Servo, all of them combining to set this up. And again, they're self-serve stations. You can get more than one tree, but it's to plant on your own property, not anywhere around. These are intended for your own property. And maybe, text or call or email some friends or neighbors that might be interested. Again, they've got 1,000 trees that they are giving away today. And if there's some left over, they'll plant them next Saturday in Genesee Valley Park. So it's big project, but the idea is to cool the planet, and it's not that we're going to plant a trillion trees right here, but this is a worldwide project to plant more trees. Trees have tremendous effects in your yard. They are beautiful to look at. They, as I mentioned last week, they host a lot of beneficial caterpillars and butterfly caterpillars, and some things like gypsy moth caterpillars, but that's just the way things go with nature. There's occasionally an insect that runs amok, but there's tons of beneficial insects that we we need to encourage with more trees. But beyond just beautiful and, you know, helping to sort of diversify the habitat in our yards, maybe a little less grass to mow once those trees shade some of your grass. But they also cool the area, and you can reduce the amount of air conditioning in your home potentially by planting some shade trees. Now, this takes time. You know, a tree seedling is not going to do this in the next 2 years. But, you know, now's the time to plant it, watch it grow. Maybe take some photos with your kids or grandchildren or yourselves and take a photo each year as this tree grows. So these seedlings are going to be, I don't know, maybe 12 or 14 inches high, I'm guessing. Some might be higher, some might be lower. They'll take probably a year or so maybe to start growing very much. Then they'll grow pretty quickly. And you know, even though you're starting with a very small tree, it is much easier to plant and bring that home than a tree that has a 1-inch diameter trunk and, you know, you root ball weighs 250 pounds and you have to have it delivered because you can't put it in your car and you have to have someone plant it because you can't lift the thing. In the long run, actually, this tree seedling might catch up with those bigger trees. The bigger tree's going to take a few years before it starts to grow very much, and then it will grow maybe slowly for a little while. Just got to get its roots established. These seedlings, they tend to do much better. So, but they have a cooling effect for your house and for the city in general. You know, if you have a tree over your driveway, the sun is not beating on your driveway and giving off a lot of heat over the course of the summer. And, you know, that's not going to make a big difference for your driveway or sidewalk, but you multiply that by 1,000 times with these tree seedlings, and that can have a significant effect over time. So some of these trees are smaller, like the redbud, and I'm not certain they'll have all these varieties, but the redbuds are an ornamental tree that might get to be 20 feet tall at most. Many of these trees are more shade trees, like red oaks, sugar maples, silver maples, some tulip trees potentially. Again, some of these, because the nursery didn't have a frost, they didn't go into dormancy, so they didn't want to dig them. So the selection may be different than what you've seen advertised or what I mentioned, but they'll have some nice trees for you. And the shade trees might get to be 40, 50, 60 feet. A red oak could be quite a bit higher. You know, again, that's going to be maybe your children or grandchildren that see it reach 80 to 100 feet. But keep that in mind as you're planting these seedlings or buying a tree. I think Bricolo Nursery has some sales going on some of their evergreen trees right now. I saw a couple concolor firs in one of the photos they posted. So these are bigger trees that you might need help planting. But again, whether you buy one or whether you get one of these tree seedlings, think about what it's going to look like in 30, 40 years maybe. And then you or whoever owns that house 30, 40 years from now won't have to do what one of my neighbors had to do, which was cut down a concolor fir that was planted maybe as a former Christmas tree. I don't know. It was planted maybe 5 feet from their house and their porch, and it was easily 80 feet tall now. And I don't know how much they paid to have it taken down, but that was a tricky job, taking down a tree that tall. It may have been 100 feet right next to the house. I mean, it was actually growing kind of in the area between the house and where their porch came out. So it was, you know, two sides of it were the tree company had to worry about crushing. And it took them a while. It took them, well, actually, it took them all day. The trunk they cut up into kind of firewood size pieces, but it's not good firewood, and they're wicked heavy because it was a big trunk. But it was a great example of a very nice tree, fabulous tree, just planted in entirely the wrong place. There really isn't a tree you can plant, you know, 4 or 5 feet from a house and have anything turn out well. You've got a, maybe a Japanese maple, but because I did that actually, and I'm gonna have to take some limbs off. It's not that big, you know, it's not gonna grow that big, but you really don't want trees that close to a house generally, and certainly not a big shade tree. Red buds tend to spread out, and they're gonna look more beautiful if they're out in your yard spread out than if you have to keep cutting them so that they don't hang over your roof and cause problems with your roof. So be careful with where you put this tree and kind of imagine what it's going to look like 30, 40 years from now, so someone doesn't have to take it down, but they can leave it, enjoy it, and watch that grow. So again, trees that shade houses, you know, if you drive through the countryside, sometimes you'll see old farmhouses with sugar maples on the south side of the house. And I think sugar maples, for one thing, provided maple sugar, but also large growing shade trees, beautiful fall color. I mean, some of the most amazing fall color. But they also shaded the house in the summer. And then the leaves fell down and the house got some sun during the winter to warm it up. So it's maybe not so common you'd see evergreens planted on the south side of the house, but more likely a deciduous trees and often sugar maples. And sometimes you can see really old sugar maples that were probably planted when that house was built, maybe in the 1800s. Again, if you're driving around the countryside, it's old farms. That's maybe where you're most likely to see this. So beware where you plant this. You don't want to have to move it. And it's going to be a great tree. Not only do trees reduce the temperatures, they have a heat island effect in a city that's referred to, but they also absorb a lot of water, and that actually helps to reduce storm runoff to some degree. Again, small degree, but over many, many trees, it's significant. And they also sequester carbon in the trunk of the tree and the branches of the tree. Every year, it builds and sequesters more carbon. And you can imagine that a huge red oak might have a lot of carbon in it and would retain that for, you know, maybe 200 or 300 years that tree is alive, again, if it's planted in the right spot. So trees have an incredible number of benefits, and beyond the fact they look kind of cool. Now, if for some reason you can't get over to Genesee Valley Park or Seneca Park today, it's 10 to 3. I actually have a couple of tulip tree seedlings, and I've got a kind of an unlimited supply of redbud seedlings because I have a redbud, which is the progeny of my neighbor's redbud, and I have, you know, probably half a dozen redbud seedlings growing in my yard right now, which I need to remove because I don't need half a dozen more redbud trees in my yard, as beautiful as that would be in the spring. So if you, these are free also, and just email me if you're interested in a tulip tree or a redbud. I've got some extras in my yard and rather send them to a good home. And this is the ideal time to plant them. Fall is when the roots get established, and they'll do really well for you, I think, next year with a fall planting. So again, email me if you're interested, michael@saverlife.com. There's also some very inexpensive plants available, and I mean like a dollar each, at the birdhouse today. The birdhouse on Monroe Avenue, Michael Hainan is there for his annual fall blowout sale. He does this once a year in October, and he brings his plants, which propagates from his nursery in the city on the Burnham Crescent, and really unusual plants. So these, you know, there may be some in bloom, but generally he brings fairly small plants, so they may not be in bloom, but he's happy to tell you what they're going to do and maybe ask him what kinds of plants might fit a certain spot in your yard. It's maybe a wet or clay soil or shady, or you want a tall perennial or whatever. These are perennials, and this blowout sale, they're a dollar each, so he doesn't have to overwinter them, and I would rather send them off to a good home. So he's at the birdhouse today at like 10 to 2 or something like that, and a good chance to visit the birdhouse, get some maybe some feeders for fall and winter, maybe suet feeders, maybe some, we've been using some shelled peanuts, which really has a great benefit in that there's really no mess left afterward as the birds eat them from the feeder. And you have to dole them out a little bit because they could eat, hundreds of pounds a day if they told all their friends about it. But it's really kind of amazing that there's no mess at all underneath the feeder, as often there are when they have to shell birdseed. These shelled peanuts are great. And the birdhouse has those and tons of other things. Again, Michael Heenan there today. The only time that he's does this blowout sale once a year in October. So head over to the birdhouse. And, some really knowledgeable people there. If you're trying to attract a certain kind of bird or trying to keep squirrels away, they've got a whole lot of different options for keeping squirrels at bay. And they also have been doing a lot of events online. So Tuesdays, their tea and tweets have been online at 10 a.m. And also often on Saturdays, they'll have a online event you can check out. And the birdhouse is a great resource if you are interested in attracting some birds or just learning more about the birds and the wildlife and everything around us. They focus on birds, but nature in general is really what they cover. So again, the birdhouse today, Monroe Avenue, right near Clover, and Michael Heenan will be there. I would say he's got to be one of the most knowledgeable people on perennials in upstate New York. I mean, extraordinarily broad knowledge of perennials and especially the more or the less common ones. There's lots of people that have more, I said more sort of average perennial knowledge, and I tend in that direction. Maybe I tend to know more about the perennials you're more likely to buy in a garden center and put in your yard, and they're beautiful. But he's got some really interesting ones and tends to specialize in the less common and really kind of fascinating plants. So a dollar each, and stock up, for $10, you go home with 10 plants, and it's an ideal time of the year to put those in the ground. Today, between the free tree seedlings and the dollar perennials, you've got it made. Maybe get some bulbs to put in, and it's maybe some garlic. Ideal time of the year to do that. I've been harvesting saffron from my saffron crocuses in my front yard. I've got, maybe 30, 40 of them. I really probably should divide them after they bloom, because they're in a couple tight clumps. But they, each crocus gives me three stigmas, which are what saffron is. It's the stigma of a crocus. I was a very specific crocus, and I think, as I said last week, it takes about 4,000 of these crocus bulbs to give you an ounce of saffron. So I'll make a dish of maybe saffron rice, and that'll probably be the extent of the saffron I'm able to harvest. But it's fun to do. It smells amazing, and they're really pretty little crocuses. They're gorgeous. I posted a photo of them on Instagram if you want to see. It's a gorgeous purple, and you may find them still in garden centers. I didn't call around to see who has them. I would guess the most likely places to find them might be Sarah's Garden Center, Bristol's. You might try you could try Clover. You could try Genrich's, Van Putty's, Garden Factory. I mean, there's lots of different places, and someone probably still has some saffron crocus. They might be blooming in the box on the shelf, but they'll bloom for you next fall, and they'll be fine going in the ground right now. So it is some great planting time right now for spring bulbs and a couple like this saffron crocus that bloom in the fall. You can email me questions, michael@saverlife.com. Got a note from Chris Clemens. He has an exploringupstate.com blog, and he found a beetle, which was on his deck, I guess. Pretty large beetle. I know it's like an inch long, maybe. That's an impressive beetle. And so he did some digging, tried to figure out what kind of beetle it was, and thought it might not be very common. And he's been listening to me talk about spotted lanternflies and invasive species. So he contacted the DEC, sent them a email with a photo of the beetle that he found, and it was something like an ox-eye beetle, he thought it might be, which is not normally found in our area. There are so many different kinds of beetles. And if you know someone or know a friend of a friend who's an expert in beetles, please send me their contact info or send me their name or give them my contact information, because there's an extraordinary number of beetles out there, and I really, it is not a strong point of mine. So I had no idea what kind of beetle he had found. But the DEC got back to him same day, which was, I think, yesterday, and said that this was a hermit flower beetle, which is really kind of a cool name. I'm not sure I want to try the Latin name, but they did send the Latin name. It says they're pretty common in the Northeast, but rarely seen because they're nocturnal. They feed on the sap and fruit of various fruit trees, but are generally harmless aside from a nasty odor that they can secrete as a defense mechanism. The larvae can be found mostly in decaying wood of cherry and apple trees, but only arrive after the tree is dead and do not cause any damage. And then they sent a link with some more photos of this hermit flower beetle. Really kind of intriguing name. And again, an inch long, that is a big beetle. And you can imagine that if the larvae live in the decaying wood of cherry and apple trees, that the woodpeckers probably feast on some of those over the course of the season, which is one reason to leave at least part of a dead tree up if you can. It depends how big your yard is. You don't want a dead tree that's going to fall on something or someone. So sometimes you might take most of it down and leave part of the stump. I think Lori Bricola did this in a house that she used to live in quite a few years ago. She had a sort of a wildlife habitat at her house in Henrietta and was part of a garden tour, and she had one or two dead trees that I'm not sure actually what killed them, but I think one was a pine and maybe a couple pines. And there are a bunch of diseases that attack them. You can't really treat it, but she left, the main trunk. Maybe it was 6-8 feet of the trunk, and so the tree couldn't really fallen anything out where it was in the yard, and it was going to be this whole ecosystem of things like this hermit flower beetle that were going to colonize it. Some fungi was probably going to colonize it too, and there'd probably be some woodpeckers coming, and maybe some ants and some spiders, and really an entire ecosystem develops around that dead tree. So as you're looking at your yard, and we tend to want to clean everything up, you know, get all the dead branches off the ground, rake all the leaves out, you know, and just have this like pristine, clean look for the winter season. And really Mother Nature would rather have a lot of those branches and leaves and things still there, not on your lawn, because that will kill your lawn. Of course, if it does, then you don't have to mow as much next year. But think about that as you're looking at your yard and maybe considering maybe having less lawn next year. And if you're thinking about that, then rake those leaves over to that area of the lawn, and they will very effectively kill that for you and make it easy to plant next spring for some perennials or some shrubs or maybe some wildflowers. Just a couple inches of leaves will probably kill the grass. And just to make sure, you know, put, a foot of leaves or a couple feet of leaves on that area of your lawn, and that'll probably be dead in the spring. A few weeds like dandelions might come up through the leaves, but the grass probably won't. And we really have something like 40 million acres of grass that's being mowed each summer in the United States, and we really don't need 40 million acres of grass. It doesn't support much, and it's not very diverse, and it doesn't flower, doesn't produce berries, doesn't just, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of it, but, you know, maybe consider getting rid of some. And fall is a great time to do that, because the grass will decompose, and earthworms love leaves. They'll come up and rototill your new garden for you, and I think you'll find planting in the spring pretty easy. They seriously do rototill underneath those leaves. So again, it's a great time of the year as these leaves fall to find a home for them, and maybe not send them out to the street, but keep them and use them for your yard. Also, there was a fascinating New York Times article just a few days ago, Science Wednesdays maybe or something, and the title of it, Meet the Diabolical Ironclad Beetle. It's almost uncrushable. So yet another beetle, and they have been experimenting with this beetle, and it looks pretty scary, but they have some really great close-ups. This beetle, they describe in the New York Times article, someone driving over it, and it was a 3,500-pound sedan. Didn't kill this inch-long beetle. It was fine. And the research, which is, it is somewhat hard to believe, but it's exactly why we need to study nature, because nature has some pretty amazing solutions to things. So through their research, this ironclad beetle, they figured out that it can hold its shell and survive against a force 39,000 times its body weight. 39,000 times your body weight. Try and do the math of your body weight times 39,000. They said it's equivalent of a 150-pound person resisting the crush of about 25 blue whales on top of you. It's pretty amazing. And this little beetle eats fungus, I guess. And they figure that it's able to withstand that forces because it likes to hang around rocks and things, and it can defend itself against predators too, because it is so hard. But then they looked at the construction of it, of its shell, and it looks like almost like tree rings, but some really great photos of the exoskeleton of this beetle. So I guess, you know, yet another beetle to discuss today. One other beetle, there's I don't have the exact name, but like an oil beetle, which shows up about this time of the year. Often I've seen it in fields, like at Genesee Valley Park sometimes. I've seen it in my yard. It'll show up. And it's this sort of elongated, smooth beetle with... It seems to sit, and I don't even know how to describe the way it kind of curls somewhat, and it's got this almost oily sheen to it, and I never squished one, but I could tell, and I was in the cemetery taking a walk through the cemetery, Mount Hope Cemetery, which is gorgeous this time of the year. And I saw all these oily stains on the walkway or the road, and it apparently cars had driven over them. There were a lot of them in that area, and it leaves an oily stain when they are squished. So this one is not able to withstand the weight of a 3,500-pound sedan. But you may see them in the grass or... In this case, they were crossing a road in the cemetery, but kind of an odd-looking beetle. And again, the stains were pretty obvious there on the road in the cemetery. So those are the beetles you're more likely to see. They seem to be out during the day. Many of these beetles, thousands of them, are nocturnal, and we don't even realize they're around unless you move a rock or disturb an area of your garden, and then you may see a couple of really interesting beetles scurry around. But again, if you know someone who's just really into beetles, it would be fun to talk to them, maybe interview them, and I'd be able to send them photos of these beetles that I run into. So this New York Times article about the diabolical ironclad beetle is kind of fascinating, and really... Imagine creating a structure that can withstand 39,000 times its body weight. That is just mind-boggling. It really is. Again, the details in the photography are pretty amazing. If you run into articles like this, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com. That's how I often hear about some of these interesting creatures and things that are going on around our area. I've been out still scouting for spotted lanternfly. Look it up if you don't know what it is. It's not here yet. I have not found any, and I've done pretty extensive scouting in the Finger Lakes. And I was describing to someone this week that I was looking, driving around a couple of the big landfills in our area. And once you do that, you realize just how big these are. They're some of the biggest in New York State and some of the biggest in the Northeast that happen to be here in the Finger Lakes. And one is the Casella, Ontario County landfill on 5 and 20 between Canandaigua and Geneva, and also the High Acres, which is in Fairport near the canal. And then I still got to go to Seneca Meadows between Seneca Falls and Waterloo. The reason I was checking those sites for this insect was actually looking for the trees that they really like, which it did sound a little odd when this friend of mine, said, you're just driving around these landfills looking for a bug. Actually, I was just driving around looking for the trees that they especially like, because that's perhaps the spot most likely to find them. But the reason I was targeting landfills here in our area is that we have a lot of trash coming from outside of our area, from Pennsylvania, from New York City, and there's a lot of trucks coming this way. And that's one of the concerns, that these spotted lanternflies will hang out on a truck and take the trip up here and then find some of these Tree of Heavens Alianthus to hang out on and mate and lay eggs, and suddenly we have really, really big problems. So I haven't found any this year. As far as I know, no one has found any to report to the DEC in New York State, so that's good news, but we need to be aware. You may run into them at some point, and you need to let the DEC know, and also let me know. Love to do some more scouting and try to figure out where they might be if you spot one. And one other invasive species to mention, because it was in the news just a couple days ago, is that they have found a nest of the murder hornet. And I think this is the state of Washington. This murder hornet is from Asia. It's like 2 inches long. It's a very scary looking hornet. Hard to imagine something that big. It's not really, doesn't go after people. It's interested in honeybees, and really devastating for them. But so there have been some sighted, and they're worried that there is a nest somewhere, or several nests. And so they had some traps set up to catch these murder hornets alive so they could attach a radio transponder. These things are big enough that you can put a radio transponder on them. They tried glue, and that fell off. It didn't work, I guess. And they tried dental floss, and that didn't work. And I'm not sure what they, how they improved on that, but they did, and they managed to track one or two of these hornets back to a nest on a private property. They got permission from the property owner to get rid of and destroy that nest of murder hornets, because they don't want them to become established here in the United States. So not around here. This is in the state of Washington. But this battle against invasive species is kind of fascinating. And, they call them murder hornets. It really is. It's a scary name. So I don't know if there are more than one nest. That is certainly possible. They're going to keep trying to trap them and, again, have them take them back to the main nest. Actually, it's something we don't need them around here. So again, you run into these stories, I'm always looking for them. Send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back in the next hour with For Love of Food, Discover the Finger Lakes as well, and tomorrow 9 a.m. it's the Grapevine. And have a great day. Michael Warren Thomas here at saverlife.com.